WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, we have my old buddy, Jan Bergman. Jan is the super president of the Florida-based Cyber Citizens for Justice, and Jan has been doing some incredible things down in Florida. I mean, I'm always amazed at all of the wonderful stuff Jan comes up with. The latest, the greatest, the best is a homeowner survey. Actually, it's not just homeowners. It's everybody who's interested, right, Jan?
Yes. We asked all interested parties to give us their responses and their opinions about certain questions. Yes.
I've got to tell you, Jan, that I was absolutely amazed. I was really impressed with the quality of the survey, with the information that was asked, the questions that were asked, and the way the whole survey was presented. And that is available on your website for anyone to go and check out, right?
Right. But here comes the point. That was not my doing. Our CCFJ secretary, David Goldberg, he did surveys professionally, so he is an absolute expert. He worked for big firms creating surveys, so he knew exactly what he was doing, and that is why we could produce such an excellent survey. And, you know, I really have to say we all have to thank David Goldberg and seven of our volunteers, of our members who helped tabulating the whole answers for this great product.
You are basically, I think, the way I see you as the conductor, and you're able to bring all of these people together, and you're able to get them to work together. Not easy.
No, it is not easy. One of the things, you have to set some ground rules, and one of it is no politics. Because in the very beginning, when we created our organization, we had people arguing about politics and, you know, who likes Clinton and who likes Bush, and they banged their heads together, and it damaged more or less our membership. So, ground rule, no politics, but since then, we're doing real well. People realize we're doing something serious. And we get lots of good help, lots of good volunteers, people willing to do the work. And I have to say, it is a pleasure to working with such a great team.
You've done a number of things. The latest is the survey, and I'm very impressed, and we're going to go through the survey. You opened it up, and it was not just for homeowners. You had very strict criteria as to who could and could not respond to the survey and exactly how it was done. You had actually more responses than either one of CAI's two surveys.
Well, first of all, if you want to create a survey, and we may want to talk about what is a survey. A survey is a scientific method to gather information from certain people. In order to gather that information, you need to know who these people are, what they're doing, what their interest is in the issue. Well, we as well limited it to people who have a residence and live here in Florida and who have interest in homeowners associations. And we asked as well service providers, we asked attorneys, we had community associates managers answering, and we asked, are you a board member, are you not? We had a little problem with that, because quite a few people responded, oh, we are a homeowner. But here comes the reason why we needed certain names and things like that, because, you know, Florida has a list where you can click in a name, and it tells you if that person is a board member. And we found that there were quite a lot of board members answering. But here comes the interesting part. Most of the board members responded in a similar manner as the homeowner. So there was no prejudice or bias. Well, actually, in one case, we had a little difference percent chances of board members as to homeowners, and that was the question about do you want election reforms? Well, board members were not so much in favor of election reforms as were homeowners. What reason is clear? They already are in power. Why do they want to change the system that got them in power? So their interest was not so much into election reform, but to make it very clear here, election reform gathered nevertheless 89.8% of approval. So we're not talking here people who are against election reform, but it showed that if you know the interests of people, you can analyze the results much better. And that is why we were so much against this so-called push-pull, which the Community Advocacy Network from Donna Berger did, after they were obviously surprised to see our survey online, and one of their fan club kind of asked by email, can we respond anonymously? And I said, no, sorry, you have an opinion, please say so and tell us who you are and what you do and so on. Never heard from them again. But about 10 days later, suddenly Donna Berger's website had this push poll with the questions. And see, here comes the problem. A push poll is a push poll. You know, it's similar to what you see, you know, on home pages of newspapers. You know, if you open up the Washington Post, you see on the front page often the newspapers, you know, like, for example, do you like Obama? Or did Palin wear the right makeup last night at the debate? You know, these are push polls because everybody can answer. You don't have to say who you are. You can respond three times if you like. And it is not really any kind of opinion. Remember, the CAI had these push polls on their website.
That's before they closed us out, locked us out.
Yes, because they locked us out because the results of these push polls were not favorable to their interest. You know, they suddenly found out that 89% were for regulation. Oops, that we don't want to see so quickly, the result disappeared. And then shortly after, they closed the whole website down for non-members. But that's another piece we could talk about. But see, even anonymous, this push poll from Donna Berger created only 282 unconfirmed responses.
Okay, it was she's in the article. It says almost 300.
Yes.
Jan, you know this, but, you know, for my listeners, I tried to get Donna Berger to come on and talk about her survey. Although I was not turned down, we had some problems, and so that never happened. So just in case anybody's out there listening, she was given the opportunity to come on and talk about her survey and the results and how she sees it. So, but I appreciate the fact that you're willing to come on and be open and honest about what happened with your survey, Jan.
Well, we have nothing to hide. We have an open book. We promised that we would not reveal the names and addresses of the respondents, but we have offered a reporter and two legislators the opportunity to check names and all the information in order to confirm that we really have it if somebody doubts it. And I, you know, I think that shows that we are absolutely willing to play with open cards.
One of the things in your, and there's, you know, I recommend, highly recommend that everybody go to your website, ccfj.net, and look at the survey. There's a detailed analysis of the survey. There's also a summary of the survey with some absolutely professional looking graphs and charts and all kinds of neat stuff so that you can just look at it. One thing I want to point out, Jan, is that you did not use all of the responses you got. You only used 1,033 usable responses.
Yes. Well, first of all, as I said before, we didn't count anonymous responses. They were discarded. We had only one respondent from each household, because, you know, sometimes you have these smart guys, you know, they answer with the same email address and they say, this is Dave from household X, and now this is Jane from household X, and they both have the same opinion, you know, just to double in their opinion. We discarded all these things. We discarded responses from out of state because we said from the beginning we set the guidelines what we would allow what we wouldn't. And I think that it's very, very important to create a real survey.
You mean Tom Skiba couldn't come on and respond to your survey?
No.
But he could with Donna Burgers, right?
He could, yes.
Oh, so good.
Everybody could, and you, if you felt like it, you could go in there two or three times.
And she got 282 votes.
Yeah.
And you
got... Well, you know, you have to understand one thing. The industry, like these groups like CAI, CAN, here, Donna Burger's group called, the lobbyist group of Beck and Polyakov, they always work with the assumption that they represent tens and hundreds and thousands of people. Wrong. They normally can't muster a lot of support. See, what they're, for example, doing is, let's say the law firm represents 5,000 communities. So, but they were hired by the board to do the legal representation. The contracts don't say, and if we hire you as our legal representative, you have the right to go to Tallahassee and tell everybody that all our members are in favor of your opinion. And that is exactly what they're doing. See, they work with numbers which are very impressive, but they don't even ask these people if they allow them to use their opinion or claim it is their opinion. That is the whole problem. You know, their norm, see, the Donna Burgers can. She works with, board members down south, and 90% of the respondents were from down south only, while our survey had answers from all over Florida.
Yeah, and by the way, you'll get to see that with a chart, with numbers, with percentages of where the respondents came from. Found it interesting.
It was interesting because, you know, legislators had always claimed, oh, you know, the problems are only down south. You know, that in Miami, you know, these Hispanics, they fight in their condos. Then the next one came and said, oh, don't worry, you know, in Broward County, there are all these retirement communities of the Jews. They fight among each other. It's not a general problem. It's just limited to a few disgruntled people. This survey clearly shows that this is not true. Because don't forget, this survey, the responses were solicited by the media. You know, we had newspaper articles in big newspapers all over the state mm-hmm. asking people to respond. Don't forget that, you know, for example, we had these CAI surveys. They always claim that nearly 90% of all the people in associations are so happy. Or we had the Zogby International Community
yeah.
Association Institute survey. You know, there they only asked people who were either CAI members, specific board members. Nobody knew that this survey is being conducted until the result came out, because they pre-selected the people to respond.
Well,
that is how you get these answers.
Well, I think it depends on how you frame the question. You know, do you live Do you live in an HOA? Yes. Are you having a problem right now? No. And therefore, you know, you must be happy. Well, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I think with the Zogby report, with the Zogby survey, it wasn't something that anybody could go anywhere and take the survey. It was where the people called, and it was supposed to have been a random thing. But the way to control that is to ask the question in such a way that, you know, the answer is going to be favorable to you. You know, CAI is not going to pay thousands of dollars to purchase a survey that's going to show them that everybody's miserable. They're going to do it in such a way that it's, you know, the outcome is going to be favorable to them, which is why these polls don't usually mean a whole lot. But, you know, with you, it was open. Everybody could come. Everybody could talk. And from the people who came in and the valid responses, the responses that qualified to take part in this, you know, here's what they had to say. And we're giving everyone a chance to do it.
Right. Well, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, in 2005, when Zogby published their result,
mm-hmm.
David Goldenberg called the guys and said, look, it's nice to see the results, but you don't tell us a lot about the details, you know, how you got these results and so on. You know, I would be kind of interested. I'm an expert. I did this professionally. You know, would you be willing to share that with me? And the guy said, oh, sure, you know, we will give you some information and so on and so on and so on. I'll call you back. Well, no call back. So Dave called again. And he said, well, if you would have told me who you are, I would have told you no from start. You're a guy from the opposition.
Oh,
wow.
Really?
You know, hello. You know, we can't tell you what really is on because you would possibly spill the beans after seeing what we really did.
Well, it's interesting, Jan, because let me tell you something. I was supposed to do an interview. I was supposed to have someone on from CAI to talk about the Zogby report or the Zogby survey. And I said I wanted a copy of it. And they said, okay. So they sent me a summary. And I said, no, I don't want a summary. I want the actual survey. The summary was ready 6 months before the survey was ready. And that doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. It took 6 months to get the entire report. And why it took that long, I don't know. I find that highly suspicious.
See, you have to understand one thing. And you know, I had a good teacher in Dave Goldenberg. He told me a lot and he showed me a lot. And one of it is that if you phrase the questions correctly, you get exactly the answers you want.
That's right.
And, see, the questions that were asked in these so-called surveys were already worded so to expect certain responses. You already named some examples.
Yep.
And that is exactly the problem. And, you know, see, after we published our survey questions, you know, the CAN guys did their own. Only problem is they didn't explain their short questions very well. And out came contradicting results. You know, it was kind of funny to read some of these things they come out. You know, in one question, a majority was in favor of this, but two questions later, they more or less contradicted it.
Yeah.
You know, for example, there was a majority there to create, even from their side, there was a majority wanting to create a regulatory agency. But then came, but we don't want to pay for it. You know, hello, see, our question said you only get a regulatory agency if you're willing to pay for it. You know, that is condition number one, because that is the way it works here in Florida with the condos. And, you know, that question was answered by... by 93% of all respondents affirmative. That is a huge number, believe me, especially considering that, you know, for example, only we always get, oh, yeah, there were all your people who answered, you know, all these disgruntled homeowners, you know. Well, actually, you know, only 13% of the respondents have affiliation with CCFJ. That's a small number.
13%, 1.13?
13%, yes, 13%, you know. That's a really small number, you know, because we told our people, please don't respond if you don't live in a homeowners association and you don't have an interest in reform.
Okay, Jan, let me stop you right here and let me ask you a question. This had to do with HOAs, not condos, right?
Yes, that was HOA reform only, yes.
Okay, so a lot of people in Florida live in condos and they were not eligible to participate.
Well,
in this.
This is another fairy tale. See, in Florida, it's estimated that you have about 1.3 million condominium units. But it is as well estimated that you have about 2.2 to 2.4 million homes in homeowners associations. So actually, the number of homes and homeowners associations is much bigger than condo units.
All right.
See, you have to understand, you have mostly condos only at the beach. You know, from West Florida to South Florida to Central Florida, they're all at the beach. Mostly in Central Florida, you don't have condos. For example, where I live, it's more or less unknown. I think we have two condominiums in the whole town here. You know, it depends where you live, and it's all condos. That's a myth, which is wrong. And that was already settled during the meetings of the HOA task force in 2003-2004, which Governor Bush convened. There it was already cleared up that there are a lot more people living in homeowners associations than do in condominiums.
Okay. So, but initially now, the condominiums in Florida are regulated, and so this is trying to bring the same kind of oversight to the 2.4 million people who live in HOAs.
Well, they're not 2.4 million people. They're 2.4 million
units. I'm sorry.
And you consider that more than two people live in a home.
That's right. Okay.
So you have to count a lot more, but that's not the point. The point is, you know, this whole thing is a big legal mess. Nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows what should be done. It creates confusion. And even the so-called experts, like the attorneys, often give wrong answers because they mix up condominiums and homeowners associations. And so one of the things we feel is important, that these communities, be it condos, be it homeowners association, be it co-ops, you know, you name it, they all are communities for people to live in. Now, the basic rules should be all the same, because we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Why do we need three different ways to elect a board? Only because one is a homeowners association, one is a co-op, and one is a condominium. Makes no sense.
I
agree with
you.
It confuses judges, it confuses arbitrators, and it confuses people because they read the wrong law and say, oh, this is what it is. You know, that is wrong. Why reinventing the wheel? For example, election provisions in condominiums are a proven fact since many years. It works. There is case law, there are arbitration rulings, everybody knows how it should work, you can look it up, you can look up case law, it's done, period. Homeowners association, it's free for all, everybody can do whatever they want, and since there are no proper provisions, you find big election arbitrations, very costly, disputes in courts, and then the judge said, yeah, but people, you know, this provision doesn't tell you really how it should be done, so how should I make a ruling what's right or wrong? That is just not doable.
That is not doable. We're talking to Jan Bergman. Jan is president of the Florida-based Cyber Citizens for Justice. They have just conducted an interesting survey, and we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of the survey right now, but I would recommend highly that you check it out at the website, ccfj.net. I know you will be impressed with the professionalism of the survey, the level of detail, the analysis, and the amount of information. And Jan, one of the things, and I'm reading this, the survey itself, when it talks about regionality, it says some information generated by this survey indicates that problems with boards of directors of Florida HOAs are common. That is, an epidemic rather than isolated incidents or endemic, as some people claim. What this survey basically is proving is that the problems are epidemic, and very clear, it's not what CAI says it is. Oh, it's just an isolated incident. Most HOAs work really well, though.
Well, you know, there's one thing. You know, maybe, and that was a number that was given to us from the DBPR, that between 10 and 15% of all communities have once a year, yeah, let's say a legal disaster. That's unacceptable.
I agree.
You know, imagine that you would say, oh, yeah, and you know, it's just some little incident, you know, 10 to 15% of the population gets killed in drive-by shootings each year. Would you accept that?
I know. I agree with you. Absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, they just, oh, well, it's only a small portion. It's only 10%. It's only 15%. That's too big a number. It's too big a number. And as you've proven, it's an epidemic. It's across the board. Let's get into the actual questions, what they mean, and what the mandate is, basically, from the people who answered the survey. What is it they want, Jan?
Well, it was a little bit surprising to me that the highest priority rating from all the people, and you should have read the comments, which we haven't worked through all yet.
Are they going to be available on the website?
We will work on it to make minimum some available. I mean, if you would make all the comments available, you would need another website. I tell you, you wouldn't believe we got page-long comments.
Really?
Know? But what was important was that people want accountability of the people in charge. That was by far, you know, it had a 96.9% approval rating. You know, because, and when you read the comments coming with it, you know, our directors do what they want. They know nobody will go after them, even if they're proven guilty. So they just do what they want. They ignore the laws. They ignore anything. They ignore the opinion of the people. And don't forget, in the homeowners association, with the election provisions in place, it is hard to get out a sitting board. See, in homeowners association, for example, an annual meeting can only take place if there is a quorum. Now, a quorum is 30% of the members. It is, kind, as you well know, it's kind of hard to get 30% of the people to come to the meeting. But here comes the old sitting board. They sit in front. They say, oh, we see there's no quorum. We close the meeting. Bye-bye. The old board is a new board for the next year. Have a nice evening. And if there is too much opposition, they may even bring the association lawyer who will tell people, if you don't shut up, we'll sue you. And there is no quorum, and the old board is a new board. Bye-bye. You know, we have seen these cases. We have these cases on videotapes. There was one totally filled clubhouse, and the attorney said, I can see there is no quorum. Didn't even bother to count, and closed the meeting.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a way to stay in power. You know,
yeah.
Well, hey, you know, we have well-known dictators you can find in history books who did the same. You know, that's obviously where they learned it. But, you know, this is not how unprotected people should be, because these people are often wasting their money. And there are many good boards, there are many good volunteers who try hard to do what's right, but even a small percentage of 10 or 20% of bad guys is much too much for our population. Our society should be ashamed that we allow attorneys writing threatening letters to people, you know, which threaten them, if you don't do what we tell you, you sleep under the bridge next week. You know, I have seen these letters. They're threatening old folks, you know, who hope to live happily ever after in their retirement and hope that they will live the last years of their life in peace. They receive letters. I wouldn't even write my worst enemy.
Jan, we're not going to have time to go through the whole thing. I'm looking here at one of the tables that you have, and by far, as you said, number one, at 96.9% of those who responded want accountability of the board directors. Interestingly enough, 3.1% voted no on that. They don't want board members to be accountable.
Guess who they were?
Board members.
We received a certain amount of answers. Actually gave us their name, so there were confirmed responses, which voted no on everything. From 1 to 14, no. What? You know that these people, first, didn't really read what was being asked. Second, they would say no to anything. Possibly not if you tell them, hey, you get a free check from the government, they would not say no, but that might be the only thing they would refuse. But, you know, the problem is there are always some people. You see it. There are still people today on these boards who believe that these communities protect their property values. I mean, the economy has proven them wrong. Everybody in the meanwhile who deals with these issues know that actually these communities are a liability to people's wallets, but they still believe it.
It's the same thing. Well, that, you know, the accountability of the directors was 96.9%. In a very close second place, 96.8% is owners' right to speak at board meetings, and amazingly, 3.2% said they don't want the owners to speak. I mean, that's democracy up close and personal.
Well, you should have read some of these comments. There was one comment of a guy who voted no, and he said, you know, these homeowners are dumb, they don't know anything, and they just disturb the meeting.
Nice.
Okay, hello.
Nice.
You know, in my opinion, a person like that shouldn't be a board member. Sorry.
Oh, I agree with you. Records request, 95.7. So, I mean, these are pretty close to, records request enforcement. They want to be able to get in and look at the records to find out if their money is safe, if the money's being absconded with. We've heard some pretty bad horror stories, but 4.3% don't want enforcement of record requests.
Don't want record requests, you may have two reasons. Either they would catch you red-handed in the cookie jar, or you don't want to let the people know what is there. I mean, you get the answer then as a reason for that. We say, oh, it disturbs the business, it costs the association money, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on, you know. See, I'm sure it costs the association money if for each record request the board tells the attorney, please fight the record request. I mean, we've seen the cases over and over and over again where simple record requests turned into lawsuits because the board didn't want to show the records and hired the attorney to fight it. You know, I've seen tens of thousands of dollars spent trying to stop people from seeing the records, and that just has to stop.
No, I agree with you. Credibly, 95.6% want safeguards before lien and foreclosure filings, but 4.4% don't want that.
Well, here a little bit into play comes that there are quite a few people who don't really understand how things are done. See, and you could see that as well in Donnerberger's poll, where the conclusion was, bots want more power. I mean, after reading the results back and forward, that was the conclusion I couldn't come up with. But, you know, obviously Donnerberger has her own ways of interpreting things. What these people don't understand is that filing a lien costs money, period. Because you have to do it with the help of an attorney who will charge for it. But we have seen, and we always see, that there is often accounting error that comes into place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that people paid, but the manager booked it in a different account, so this account was unpaid, but somebody else had paid twice. But they didn't realize that. So the guy who paid, but whose check was accounted for in a different account, suddenly gets a lien, a foreclosure letter from an attorney charging him $400 for filing the lien and blah, blah, blah. Now, then here comes the owner and says, here's a check, you know, hires an attorney, makes a big fuss out of it, rightfully so, I would do as well if somebody would send me an unjust lien. It ends up that the legal fees are there, but the association has to admit, hey, sorry, we made a mistake. Then guess who pays the legal fees? The association. So it doesn't help the association. That's why we want safeguards, meaning there should be a certified letter going to the homeowner saying you have 30 days time to clarify the whole issue here. Did you pay? Did you not pay? If you didn't pay, do you want to pay? Before legal fees are added, because it will save associations and owners a lot of money, and it saves a lot of hardship and a lot of bad feelings, believe me.
Yeah, but think of those poor attorneys who are not going to be making all that money, Jan.
Yeehaw, yeah. I'm feeling so sorry for them.
I can hear that in your voice.
Oh, yeah, right.
I can hear that in your voice. One thing that I think is probably rather unique to Florida is create time restraints on closing hurricane shutters. Can you explain that one?
What? I can explain that to you. We have associations who pushed through regulations saying that you can only close your hurricane shutters 48 hours after the hurricane hit, or when before the hurricane hits, meaning the so-called 48-hour warning entitles you to close your hurricane shutters. Now, for example, if you go for vacation because Aunt Mary in Boston has birthday and it's during the hurricane season, so what do? You leave your hurricane shutters open and hope that in the week you're up in Boston, no hurricane hits, right? While there's a board saying, wow, our management company has a nice little company. For a certain fee, they will close the hurricane shutters when you're away. Well, that is pretty tricky. First of all, you have to give these people the key to your home, and you don't know who these people really are. So they have access to all your private property, to your private mail, to everything there is in your home. Secondly, what happens if these people forget or don't have the time to close the hurricane shutters? Here comes the hurricane. Your house gets destroyed or badly damaged. So you go to your insurance company. Well, the insurance company said, look, this wouldn't have happened if your hurricane shutters would have been closed. And you know you get a big discount on your premium because you have these hurricane shutters, so we are not paying. Now this little company which took your money to close your shutters, they don't have any kind of real insurance which would then come in and pay for the damage. So what happens? You're sitting there with a damaged house, nobody will pay because the association came up with a great idea that hurricane shutters can't be closed until 48 hours before the hurricane hits. You know, which is plainly ridiculous, because don't forget, a lot of these so-called hurricane shutters are used in many, many other countries as security devices against break-ins, you know, against theft. And when people, for example, in Germany leave for vacation, they close these shutters. They're nice looking, good looking shutters, normally kind of the same color at the house, so you don't even see it until you get pretty close to the house. They look nice. They're approved by the Architectural Review Committee. Don't you ever forget that. So we're not talking. Yeah, we're not talking here plywood or something like that. We're talking real, decent, good-looking hurricane shutters. And here the association gets into a liability because I can assure you one thing. If what I said happened, that the hurricane shutters were not closed, the house is damaged, the insurance doesn't pay because of that, do you think the homeowner will say, oh, tough luck, so I build me a new house with my savings? Mostly they don't have any more savings then. Secondly, this is a very litigation-friendly country. So they will see an attorney and say, so who can we sue? Guess who?
Yep.
The first one, the association, because they made this stupid rule.
That's right. And unfortunately, the board members who made the rule are not going to be held personally liable.
Oh, no, because they're indemnified. Hey, they can just sit there and laugh, you know. Ha, this dummy, you know, he didn't close his shutters, you know. Now his house is busted. Oh, tough luck, you know.
You do have a way with words, yeah.
You know, I tell you one thing. If you talk daily with these people, who are kind of partially victimized by these associations, and you read their emails.
I do. I get them too.
Oh, Jesus, you know, you sometimes you don't believe you live in the United States of America.
I know, and that's what they tell me. They call me up. They say, "Shoo, I left a communist country to come here. What's going on? This is worse than it was wherever I lived before."
Why, you know what I have realized? That a lot of the people who came to this country are more willing to fight for their rights than the people who grew up here.
Because the people who grew up here were told that they had the greatest freedoms in the world. They've never been anywhere else. They've never seen what it's like anywhere else. They've been told that, and so they're sitting there, well, yes, maybe we've lost some freedoms, but we're still the freest country in the world. And that's what your biggest downfall is going to be, because they don't realize they're not.
Well, see, I always have to laugh when I get friends over from Germany. You know, in Orlando Airport, then we go and they see these overland wires, you know, which are actually carrying the electricity.
Right.
Because they say, now what is that? say, well, you know, that's electrical, you know. What?
Yep.
You know? Oh, yeah, you know, we had that after World War II, but
right.
Then all the cables disappeared underground, you know.
Right.
And isn't this country especially known, you know, for having lots of hurricanes and things like that? You know,
right.
Why do you put these electrical lines above ground, you know?
Yeah.
And this is something people don't understand.
Speaking of electrical wires, I think they're getting a little bit fed up. Hello?
You know, it's easier if you can replace them each time and get financial aid from the government instead of putting their once-and-for-all real lines up, which don't get destroyed every time.
Well, when I lived in Arizona, we had the lines in, you know, underground, and I don't think we ever lost power over there. When I moved to Washington, the lines were dangling all over the place. The street lights, red traffic lights, were dangling from wires. So, and then you have, because we don't get hurricanes like you do down there, but we do get the after effects of hurricanes. We get a lot of the winds and the rains and the heavy snowstorms. A lot of trees come down on the wires, knock down the street lights. It's just a total disaster. It's just a piece of wire. I mean, it's just an electrical wire dangling across the street.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it is dangerous.
See, this is one thing when I told friends in Europe, you know, we have a new house and I now have a generator, you know, just to cover up because we lose electricity. They say, lose electricity? Why is that?
Yeah.
You know, they can't understand. They may lose electricity for 2 minutes. But my mom just complained to me because she had to reset her clock. But that was because they changed the big station around. So they had to close down. They announced it in the newspaper that you would lose electricity for an estimated 5 minutes.
Well, our friend Beanie had lost electricity after Ike went through Houston for over 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. It took before she got her electricity back.
Yeah, well, we're a high technological country.
We are. We're the best. We're the biggest. We're the most powerful. All right, yeah, and we're running out of time. The other one, okay, the one we just talked about, the hurricanes, came in at 76.6. Below that, you had 75.1% want to restrict long-term rentals if not permitted by original documents. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, that is one thing which you hear all the time. You know, the industry claims that renters will bring down your property values. You know, my argument, most likely most of us have been renters at one time. Did we behave badly then because we were renters?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
You know, you can have bad owners, you can have bad renters, you can have bad everything.
That's right.
So creating rental restrictions, especially in our economy in the moment, causes people to lose their homes because they can't pay it themselves, but they would have the possibility, you know, to find a renter who more or less would pay the mortgage, which would avoid foreclosure. But no, here comes the association, no, sorry, you can't rent, we rather foreclose on your home. And then they claim, oops, another home which doesn't pay dues. You know, it is in a way a stupid circle. And it is caused by people who try to tell these people who often are very gullible that this is right and that is wrong because it fits their wallet. I come back to Europe, try to tell somebody he can't rent his own home whenever he feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
That person would look at you like deer in the headlight and think, hey, are you playing with a full deck or what?
I know. It's extensive developer regulation. That was 90.9%.
Right. And
what is that?
Well, see, the way it works, especially in homeowners associations, that's not so much known in condos. In homeowners associations, you have developers who make it a life income to develop these communities. More or less, they build out to about 93%, but Florida law states that they have to turn over control after 95% of the lots are sold. Now, they avoid this, and then they charge the owners who already bought in rent for all the amenities. They don't account for the money these owners pay. They do whatever they want, and there is very, very little accountability. I mean, I know some of the stories, they sound worse like the mafia is in charge.
Well, I think the whole HOA thing is a mafia.
In a way it is, and to be very honest, I'm following closely the story from Las Vegas.
Yep.
Because this shows what is really going on. I said, finally, somebody obviously pulled the plug and is willing to investigate what is really going on, because these are things we have claimed all along.
Just in case anybody out there does not know what's going on in Las Vegas, the FBI is investigating a ring of HOAs, developers, management companies, and
and board members who were planted on boards.
And exactly, the whole scam basically is being investigated. My question, and we're not going to have time to go into it, is just how wide they're going to expand the search and how deep they're going to go into it. And I'm wondering if they're going to find the ripple effect, you know, start in Las Vegas and they find that it goes to Arizona, it goes to California, it goes to all the way down to Florida and Washington.
It goes to Florida because we already found two names which work as well here in Florida and do the same thing.
Very good. Maybe they'll start expanding. Maybe they'll look into that. There's still a lot. You had 14 questions. We're not going to get to all of them. There's one that I want to ask you about, revitalization control enforcement. Can you tell us what that is all about?
Well,
91.1% of the people who responded said yes on that one. They wanted some controls.
see, well, the law in the moment more or less kills deed restrictions after 28 years. They run out. Now, a lot of these people in these older communities don't want these associations to continue.
I wonder why.
But some smart attorneys and some power-hungry board members have the right to more or less renew the deed restrictions without the approval of the neighbors. And we feel that it should only be allowed if a majority of the neighbors agree to it. They have to be asked. It should be a democratic way to do things. And it's not because some service providers like to keep their income.
Majority. I would say 100%, because when you buy into that, you buy into the notion that they will be expiring at the end of 20 years. And I think in order to go in and change anything, it has to be 100%, because it's a property right you have that you're giving up.
Well, actually, I know two folks who moved out of a mandatory homeowners association after being told, if you don't like it, move. You know, the typical words you hear. So they did. They moved into a community which expired, where the deed restrictions expired a year before they moved there. So there was nothing there anymore. They moved there, and about half a year later, some guys said, oh, we have a mandatory HOA, we renewed the deed restrictions, and that is perfectly legal. They're now in litigations over the rightfulness of renewing the deed restrictions. You know, so even if you move out, you're still not safe from these associations.
I had a guy call me one day and said, I bought a house. I told the realtor, I do not want an association, and we found a house, and we've packed our stuff. We've sold our house. We've packed all our stuff. It's in the van. We're getting ready to go to settlement. And we're handed a disclosure packet about the association. What can I do? I said, well, you're in Virginia and you have 72 hours. You can back out of the deal without losing your earnest money deposit. And I said, if you really don't want to live in an HOA, back out of the deal. And he said, thank you, and I didn't hear from him. I heard from him two or three years later, and he said, I should have listened to you, because it seems that the realtor convinced them that it's a dormant association. It had expired. Nobody could do anything about it. And then they decided that they were going to resuscitate the association. So he calls me up, and he says, Sue, I should have listened to you, but... He says, do I have to be part of this association? I said, yep, sorry, you do.
Yep.
Your only remedy is to get away from it as fast as your little legs can carry you.
Yes, and see, many people don't understand. And you know, on the other hand, in many areas in our country, the only way to buy a newer home, you know, let's say 10 years or younger, is in an association.
Right.
You know, I mean, I made the experience when I tried to move out of the association in St. Augustine, and I ran around like a maniac to find a place with no association. I had, by the way, the same experience, but I knew the problem. I got a nice lot offered, which I liked, and we were considering buying it. And the realtor said, oh, no, here's no association. Don't worry, it's all fine and dandy and so on. Well, I went to the courthouse.
And guess what?
Guess what? I mean, it was not in working order, the association, but the possibility to create one was there. You know how quickly I told the realtor, thank you, but no thank you?
And you ran as fast as your little legs could carry you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, what? You know, I now have some neighbors who permanently violate any kind of deed restriction.
Don't they, you just they, love them?
They come over the fence. They're cows.
Jan, thank you so much. Thanks. It was great talking to you. It was great. Thank you for conducting this survey, because what you did was prove our point. What we've been saying for years and years and years and years and years. And you did it scientifically, professionally, and you did an outstanding job, as always. Thank you very much.
Oh, you you're welcome, and so everybody is welcome, and everybody should take a look at it. Our website is ccfj.net. Please go there and see the results. It's a real survey. It's not a fixed one. It's not a push-pull. It's a real survey, and you will be amazed about the results. It was exactly how we expected it to be and what we said all along over the years.
One thing I want to point out is that they had more responses, more respondents to this survey for one state than CAI had for the entire country. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for joining us today. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.